Hello and welcome to There Is No Offseason, the Dynasty Baseball Podcast at Baseball Prospectus. My name is Jesse Roach. I'm a Dynasty writer and ranker at Baseball Prospectus, responsible for the top 500 Dynasty rankings and the top 500 Dynasty prospect rankings, both of which have been updated within this month. The prospect rankings were updated on May 5th, and the Dynasty rankings were updated the next week on May 12th. I'm recording this podcast on Wednesday, May 24th, and we are now almost 3 weeks removed from the most recent prospect rankings update. And I think it's as good a time as any to revisit those rankings and talk about some potential movement at the top. And I'm going to be focusing on the top hitting prospects and pitching prospects and what they've done this year and where they may be falling in the next update, which is going to be in early June. So at the outset, there have been some graduations on the hitting side. Anthony Volpe has graduated and Brett Beatty has graduated. We are likely going to see the graduations of Grayson Rodriguez very shortly, and also Kodai Senga as well on the pitching side. Before I move to pitchers, though, let's focus on the bats. And I think it all starts at the very, very top. And there is a legitimate debate on who the new number one is. Obviously, we've had the graduations of Corbin Carroll and Grayson Rodriguez. Then Jordan Walker ascended to the top in the most recent rankings update. Spoiler alert, he will likely not be ranked number one in the next update in June. His performance in AAA has been disappointing, to say the least, especially following his, I guess, lackluster performance at the Major League level. He was fine at the Major League level for the most part, but there was, of course, some concerning underlying trends with him, and he just wasn't performing well on the field in particular. And it behooved the Cardinals to send him down, given that they had so many other options to fill those corner spots and give Walker more seasoning in the minor leagues. It's really important to remember with Jordan Walker that he literally just turned 21 years old on May 22nd. Just 2 days ago, he turned 21. He is so young. Yes, he looks like an aged veteran. You know, he looks like a man. But he is so young, and his hit tool for a player like Walker with big power and great athleticism, his hit tool is the open question, and that's something that does need some refining in the minor leagues, in the upper minors. And so far in AAA, to date, he's hit .239, .333, .386 with an 83 weighted runs created plus. So he's been a below average performer in AAA. He isn't getting to as much power as you'd maybe hoped for him to get to. All that said, his performance, his power numbers, his ISO is just 148. Underneath all that, there is some promising items that really, these are the reasons why we love Jordan Walker to begin with. He has that massive power. His average exit velocity in AAA has been 91.7 miles an hour. He's hit the ball really hard, 46.3% hard hit rate. He's making plenty of contact. His zone contact rate's well above average, 84.7%. It was at 84.3% at the major league level. The fact that he is making so much contact, and he is actually making general above average or average contact rates overall, even with his approach and some elevated chasing, you know, that's incredibly promising for a player as young as Walker, for someone who has had contact issues as recently as last year. So I think there is a lot to like with Walker, obviously. I mean, he is definitely in the conversation at number one still, even if I'm saying that he's likely moving off number one. One thing I'd like to see more of Walker is getting to more of that power in the air on fly balls and line drives. He still hits a lot of ground balls. His ground ball rate in AAA is 47.8%. At the major league level, it was 60.4%, which is just not going to cut it for a power hitter. There is a lot of growth that's necessary for Walker, as there is for a lot of these players, but there's a reason why Walker's going to fall, and he will fall to 3 in the next update. He's dropping a tier, so he will drop out of the top 60 in the Dynasty rankings update overall, and he will drop to 3 in the prospect rankings update. Of course, that is still several weeks away, so there is, of course, a chance that that changes between now and then, but the reason why he's likely dropping is due to these other two prospects, Ellie De La Cruz and Jackson Holliday. They have been absolutely electric since the last rankings update. Let's start with Ellie De La Cruz. He was ranked 2nd, May 5th, and up to that point, he had not necessarily produced. This is why you have to be incredibly patient with these small samples. His season was delayed due to a hamstring strain. He didn't debut until April 20th in AAA, and got thrust right into AAA at 21 years old. It's important to remember, Ellie De La Cruz is older, 4 months older, basically, than Jordan Walker. But since May, basically, since May, Ellie De La Cruz has been absurd. Since May, he's hit .329 with 6 home runs and 5 stolen bases. I think for our purposes, the most important part of all this is his strikeout rate has just been 21.6% in May, and his walk rate has been 15.9%. He's had a .443 on base percentage, which is just a massive boon for Ellie De La Cruz. And of course, his slugging percentage is .685 with an ISO of .356. It's been a monstrous month for him. But again, I think the most important thing we're seeing with Ellie De La Cruz is a completely changed approach. Before this season, we'll just flash back to last year. Last year, and the year before even, Ellie De La Cruz was quite aggressive. He was an aggressive hitter. He had shown strides in managing his approach even just last year. His swing rate dropped substantially, but still it was on the wrong side of 50%. All of a sudden this year, his swing rate's down to 41.7%. That is basically a 10% decrease in his swing rate. There's of course been a corresponding decrease in his chase rate. You know, last year his chase rate was, you know, over 40%. This year it's down to 29.1%, which is, at least by major league standards, just below average. It's basically squarely borderline average. And at the same time, his contact rates have improved slightly. You know, last year I will say that his contact rates were not dire, and that's why I was not as concerned about the hit tool as I think some were. Particularly his zone contact rate last year was around 80%. This year, it's up to 80.9% so far in AAA. His contact rate's up about 4 to 5%, up to 69.4%, partly because he's just chasing less, and he's making actually slightly more contact on balls outside the zone as well. So everything, the hit tool's really trending way up for Ellie De La Cruz, which is important because I think that there was a very real risk that he was going to have a below-average hit tool. If that, at the major league level, maybe it would have been, he could have gone the way of someone like a Joe Adell. But what he's shown so far in AAA is massive growth for a young player. And if his play approach continues to grow, this is a potential superstar. I think Ellie De La Cruz is arguably the most physically gifted player in all the minor leagues. This is, you know, he has plus power. Arguably, I think that at peak it could be 80 grade power. He's flashed it in AAA. In one game this year, he had 3 barrels over 116 miles an hour, which I believe has never been done in the Statcast era, and that he was the only one to do it. It's really game-changing power, and he's getting to more and more of that power in the air as well. I mean, he gets to that power in the air. His home run fly ball rate this year in AAA is 31.8%, which is honestly very similar to what was generally last year. And you gotta think that he has the upside to be a player who is a potential 30-30 player. And the speed hasn't necessarily been as played as well yet this year. He is coming off of a hamstring strain that may be impacting his ability to steal bases. He's just 7 for 12. I'm not too concerned. He has plus speed, you know, probably plus speed. There is 30-30 upside or more with Ellie De La Cruz, and I want to just stress the power one more time with him. His average exit velocity so far in AAA 77 bad balls, 93.6% or miles an hour. Obviously, his max is massive. The hard hit rate is 53.2%. It's a really, really impressive profile. And if he continues to make these strides with his approach, with his bat-to-ball ability, I mean, I think that he probably should be the number one overall prospect in all of baseball for fantasy. Now, for real life, I think it's likely not Elly De La Cruz. And this is why. It's because Jackson Holliday is otherworldly. And I'm going to move to Holliday now. And why Holliday, in real life, is definitely, I think, the better prospect than Elly De La Cruz. I think the main driving force here is that his hit tool is one of the best in all of the minor leagues. And I think that his on-base ability, which is what drives real-life value a lot more than just pure power and obviously speed, is far better than Elly De La Cruz's on-base ability. Now, Jackson Holliday's, his ETA is further away. So for fantasy, that matters. For real life, that matters a little less. So even when I say his ETA is further away, I mean, his ETA is probably September at this point. I'm kind of thinking it might be September this year. The Orioles, they do have a lot of excellent options in the infield at the upper levels. So I don't really think there's any reason to rush Holliday, even though obviously they're very competitive. I think that Holliday is going to fly through the system. I honestly think he needs to be in Double A right now at 19 years old. He clearly is too much for high A and for A ball in general. Over this season so far to date, he's hit .395 with a .519 on base percentage and a .698 slugging percentage. He has far more walks than strikeouts, 27 strikeouts against 33 walks. His walk rate's up over 20%. It's 20.4%. It's just an incredible profile so far this year. And I think there's a legitimate outcome here where Holliday's hit tool ends up as a plus-plus hit tool. I think it could project that way. I think it's certainly looking that way right now. And I think the power gets to plus in time. I don't think it's there yet. The roll's not there yet, even though his ISOs are massive. I think it can get there. And right now, he does have plus speed. There's internal reports at BP that have been published recently, a report on Holliday that has his speed as plus. So that is crazy to have to project any prospect like that. 7.66 for offensive purposes, for fantasy purposes, is ridiculous. I mean, Elly De La Cruz may now project to 5.77, but still, I think Holliday's, I think future overall projection is likely higher than De La Cruz's, but De La Cruz is squarely neck and neck with Holliday, due in large part to proximity that he has over Holliday. And, you know, the power does matter. The massive power that he has does matter for fantasy a lot more than maybe a hit tool does in a lot of respects. But for a lot of people, I could definitely understand preferring Holliday to De La Cruz, even in fantasy, even with De La Cruz's likely arrival sooner than Holliday. And there was even rumors as recently as yesterday that De La Cruz would arrive today. Unlikely. I mean, we'll see when he arrives. I think it's probably going to be this summer. If he continues his pace, it's going to be hard for Cincinnati to justify keeping him down. I do think that it makes logical sense for the Reds to hold De La Cruz in Triple A until September, much like the Diamondbacks did with Corbin Carroll, like the Orioles did with Gunnar Henderson. It would make sense for them to do that and then bring him up in September, keep him rookie eligible for next year. That may not happen though. The Reds have been known of late to bring prospects up when they're ready, regardless of all these other considerations and regardless of their contention window. So I could see De La Cruz coming sooner rather than later. Holliday, given that the Orioles did what they did with Gunnar Henderson last year, I think Holliday likely doesn't arrive at the absolute earliest until September. Now, we need to remember that the Orioles have They brought Joey Ortiz up. They have Jordan Westberg, who's crushing AAA. They have Connor Norby, who's holding his head above water in AAA. They have options in the infield in the upper levels. That means I just don't really think that there is an organizational need to rush Holiday to the major leagues. I mean, he's just 19 years old. I don't think this is going to be a Juan Soto type ascension through the minor leagues. Now, that's number one. I legitimately think it could be either of them by the time the next update occurs. I think that both of them are very much worthy for fantasy purposes for real life. And again, not necessarily my purview, but I would likely prefer Holiday. Now, let's move beyond those top three and focus on the rest of this, I guess, top 10 to 15 range for prospects for on the hitting side. Now, two prospects in this range in the last update that have struggled this year in large part are Jackson Chourio and Jordan Lawler. And I think that their struggles are concerning in different ways. And I think that they both are concerns that we had even just last year, but their loud tools kind of outweighed those concerns. First, Chourio is performing just below average in AA. Again, we need to remember that Chourio is 19 years old. He turned 19 in March, so he's a young 19, the youngest player in AA. He's hitting .252, .301, .391 with a 92 weighted runs created plus. It's not been the loudest season, but he does have 5 home runs and 10 stolen bases in 37 games. The power and speed is there. They're there. It's there. The massive bat speed is there. The aggressive approach is there. There is still the underlying swing and miss that reared its head last year is still there. But I'm not as concerned with Chourio as I would be for Lawler, and I'll get to Lawler in a second. I think that Chourio still is managing a reasonable strikeout rate. His strikeout rate is 24.1%. He's managing a reasonable strikeout rate. He's also playing in the Southern League. The Southern League has the pre-tacked balls this year. It's just hitting in general is just down in the Southern League all across the board. I just think that I'm willing to give a lot of the struggles he's had a bit of a pass. His swing and strike rate is 13.7%. It's not a devastating number, and partly it's elevated because he's an aggressive hitter. So I think that generally I'm not as concerned with Chourio. He's likely kind of holding serve pending the next, couple of weeks and how he performs, but I'm not really overly concerned with him despite his, I guess, underwhelming production to date. Now, a player I am concerned about is Jordan Lawler. Jordan Lawler has been dreadful in AA, and this is a continuation of his struggles last year in AA. He's hitting .165, .299, .339 with a 73 weighted runs created plus. His strikeout rate is up to 31.3%. Part of that is due to his approach. He is very much a patient hitter, and because of that, he works deep counts. He's going to strike out more often, but he's also in a much more hitter-friendly environment than Chourio. His swing and strike rate is actually exactly the same as Chourio at 13.7%, but it's more of a concern for Lawler because that swing and strike rate is artificially low. And this is why swing and strike rate generally for hitters is kind of a wonky stat, because he doesn't swing nearly as much as Chourio. Per pitch, his swing rate is generally a lot lower, about 40% or less than 40%. I don't have data in front of me there, but his contact rates are worse than Chourio. And I think that I'm just a bit concerned about Lawler. Of course, the power and speed is still there. He has 5 home runs and 11 stolen bases in 33 games. But the swing and miss, I think, is very concerning. And this is, again, a continuation of the concerns last year. It's exacerbated at this point. He's going to be 21 in July, so this is not like he's incredibly young anymore. So a lot of the issues they had late last year as a 20-year-old in a basically a 20-year-old in AA in high A, where the swinginess was showing up, I wasn't as concerned about. Partly it was late in the year, but now I am more concerned. I think there's a chance that we see Lawler drop out of this top tier of prospects into the tier that has players like Marcelo Meyer. I just think that the hit tool concerns are significant enough that he is very much at risk of falling in the next update. Now, moving off of two players who have struggled to two players who have performed as expected, or then above expected performance, I suppose. James Wood, let's start with him. He was ranked ninth in the last rankings update, holding his position. He's done exactly as expected in high A. He's hit 274, 370, 504 with a 128 weighted runs created plus. He has five home runs and six stolen bases, a 230 isolated slugging percentage. He does have some elevated swing and miss this year. Now, one of the things that made him so attractive last year in low A was that his strikeout rate was just 17.8%, and his contact rates were just ridiculous for a player that's 6 foot, listed at 6 foot 6, 240 pounds. This year, it's looking more consistent with the type of player he is, type of player we would at least think he'd be, right? His swing and strike rate is 11.1%, which for a player his age is fine. Like, I'm not concerned about it, but it's not the elite contact rates that we had seen just last year. What we are seeing from him is still very impressive for his age, for his level. He's playing majority in center field. The athleticism is through the roof. I think he's very much steady still in terms of his value. He'll probably move up in the next update given Lawler's moving down the rankings and do the graduations. We could see Wood. I mean, I conceivably we could see Wood as high as five in the next rankings update. I'm not sure I'm there yet partly because I think this next player conceivably could jump him. The reports on Junior Caminero are through the roof this year. Of course, he's in high A. I'm still bummed that he wasn't assigned directly to low A, but of course it makes sense for him not to, given that he probably should be in double A right now. He's hitting 351, 404, 709 with a 187 weighted runs created plus. The concerns with Caminero are also related to approach and swing and miss, and it's very similar to the concerns that you'll hear about with Jackson Chourillo. Caminero obviously does not have Chourillo's, I think, pure upside, but I do think that there is a better feel to hit right now at his age. This is an all-fields hitter that has great power, plus power. He has really great underlying data in terms of, there's a lot of barrel rate. There's tons of barrels, a lot of great batted ball data generally. He's hitting the cover off the ball. His performance, I think, is clearly like demonstrates that. His swinging strike rate is almost identically the same as Chirinos. It's 13.6%. Again, same, I think, hit tool concerns as Chirinos, except he's hitting 100 points more hitting for 100 points more average than Chirinos is. Partly just because the quality of his contact has been more consistently better than Chirinos. He's hitting the ball on a line fairly consistently, putting the ball in the air, barreling like tons and tons of balls. Again, he's a player who needs to be in double A. And I think there's a legitimate case to be made that maybe Caminero is even a preferred prospect to than Chirinos. I think that this is going to be interesting in the next update, looking at Chirinos, Wood, and Caminero potentially at four, five, and six in the rankings. Now, let's move off these younger players and go right to AAA. There are two players in AAA who are absolutely mashing in diff to different degrees. First, there's Kyle Manzardo. And I've detailed and talked about Kyle Manzardo a lot this year. I've written about him. I'll talk about him again today. Manzardo, of course, is having a strong season in AAA. His numbers generally may not jump off the page. He's hitting 264, 359, 521 with a 116 weighted runs created plus, 257 ISO, 8 home runs. He's doing everything we would expect and hope Manzardo to do this year. He's hitting for power. He's hitting for more power than he's ever had before. That increase in power, it's basically gone from like borderline to average exit velocities to squarely above average to plus. His average exit velocity in AAA is 91.7 miles an hour. He's had, man, at this point, it might be about a dozen balls hit harder than any ball he hit all of last year. His max this year is 111.9 miles an hour, which matters for a player like Manzardo, whose max last year was like 108. So this change is important for Manzardo. He's also, again, he's hitting everything on a line for the most part. His hard hit rate's 53.6%. His putting the ball in the air to great effect, launching average launch angle of 19.4 degrees, and doing a lot of things we expect from Kyle Manzardo in terms of he's making a lot of contact. His zone contact rate is 87.2%. He has very good plate approach. He's not chasing very much. His chase rate's just 23.6%. You know, he's a patient hitter, but he's not too patient. Manzardo is a very good hitter. You know, he's a pure hitter. He's exactly what you're looking for from a first base prospect. He has a lot of similarities with someone like a Vinny Pasquantino, to be honest. And yet, he's a lot younger. You know, Manzardo is just 22. He'll turn 23 in July. I think that, you know, the next question, I think the question that a lot of people have with Manzardo is, when is he arriving at the major league level? You know, everybody under the sun is hitting for the Rays this year. The Rays are having an epic season. And right now, where would Manzardo even fit on this roster? Yandy Diaz is, of course, mashing. He's been playing first base. Isaac Paredes is mashing. He's playing third base. Harold Ramirez is mashing. He's playing DH. They even have Taylor Walls, who fits in and fills in at all these infield positions. There is no place on the Major League roster right now for Kyle Manzardo, and the Rays have absolutely no rush or incentive to bring him up right now either. Absent an injury, I don't really think it's likely we're going to see Manzardo for a while. You know, he's not even on the 40-man roster. He's not Rule 5 eligible until this offseason, until next offseason, not even this offseason. So the Rays, a team that loves to, you know, kind of manage their budget very well and expertly, there's just not much financial incentive to bring Manzardo up. There's not much playing time incentive to bring Manzardo up. I just don't think we're going to see Manzardo. And his performance in AAA, while squarely above average, isn't so elite that he's forcing the issue. So I don't think, you know, we need to be patient with Manzardo. He was ranked 10th in the most recent rankings update. He's likely kind of going to hold serve again. He'll probably move up a little bit because of graduations, and he is a top 10 prospect in my mind, but he's not likely in that conversation for like a top 5 spot in the next rankings update. But again, a few weeks away, so we shall see. The other AAA bat that I want to talk about is Colton Cowser. And Cowser is going to be the last hitter I'm going to talk about before I move to pitching prospects. You know, Cowser has been phenomenal this year in AAA. He's hit 331, 469, 554 with a weighted runs created plus of 163. His walk rate is 19.6%. It's crazy. And what's most impressive about his performance is a lot of it came after a really poor start. In fact, since those first 2 weeks of the season, he has hit 394, 528, 679. That's right, a 528 on base percentage in AAA with a 20.8% walk rate. And it's not a teeny tiny sample. This is 144 play appearances over 30 games. I think that he has very little left to prove in AAA at this point. The Orioles, they're unlike with the Rays, there is legitimate place for Kelser to immediately slot in for the Orioles. Right now, in right field, the Orioles have a platoon of Taron Varela and Ryan McKenna. That's not ideal. I could totally see Varela going down to AAA. They bring Kelser up, and Kelser fills in right away in right field, and all of a sudden, this Orioles lineup that's already producing and quite dangerous is even more dangerous. I understand why they've waited. Just like with Manzardo, Kelser is not on the 40-man roster. He does not need to be added to the 40-man roster until after next year. And the Super 2 cutoff, which is always a moving target, usually happens in like June or July. So we're not even there yet. But again, Kowser really has nothing left to prove in AAA. He would be an immediate upgrade to the Orioles lineup. It makes so much sense for him to come up. I think Kowser's a player to start stashing in redraft formats because I think it's coming soon. Especially if your redraft format is an OBP format, because he's going to walk. He doesn't swing all that much, so he's going to walk. Now let's talk about the data with Kowser. Look, a lot of the data kind of lines up with Manzardo. It's a little weaker in a lot of ways. His average exit velocity is 91.1 miles an hour. His max is solid at 110.3. His 90th is low, a lot is lower than Manzardo's. He doesn't make as consistent hard, like elite contacts as Manzardo. His hard hit rate's 44.6%. He doesn't lift the ball as much as Manzardo. Kowser's more of a hit over power player generally. He's a line drive hitter that hits the ball to all fields. So, and of course, he's incredibly patient. His swing rate is just 36.1%. His chase rate's just 20.5%. This type of profile, though, and I'm going to stress why I'm a little concerned about Kowser is this. His zone contact rate is just 79.1%. That's lower than Ellie De La Cruz, for example. It's squarely borderline by major league standards, and that's my concern. These types of profiles have not performed well at the major league level at first lately. This is somewhat similar to like Gunnar Henderson or Jarred Kelenic, in that the zone contact rates are not great. And the swing rate is incredibly low. He's incredibly patient in AAA, and he can get away with it in AAA because AAA arms often have poor command or poor stuff. And I want to stress that, AAA pitching is not very good compared to Major League pitching. There's a massive gulf between Major Leagues and AAA, and there's a reason why a lot of teams are skipping players past AAA, right from AA to the Major Leagues. It's just because I just think AAA isn't maybe even what it was a few years ago. I just don't think it's very strong these days. Obviously, it's still stronger than like double A and high A, but I just think that there are problems at the level that you're seeing all this hitting at triple A for a reason. It's the environment is very favorable, even in an international league. That's where Kowser is. He's not in the Pacific Coast League, but the pitching quality is still poor. So I would say think that Kowser could conceivably have some struggles out the gate at the major league level. That doesn't mean you shouldn't still stash him. I think his struggles could be similar to like what we've seen from Eduard Julian this year. Kowser is a lefty. I could see him getting platooned, being involved in platoon at the major league level as well for the Orioles. They kind of send him against lefties. I could see that happening. His splits this year have been very good. He actually has performed better against lefties this year. So it those may not be a necessary move, but I think it's very possible. He did struggle really badly against lefties last year, just like Julian did. Kowser last year against lefties hit 194, 329, 287. This year he's corrected that issue. So not as concerned. Now, one reason why we're not seeing Kowser right away is because he's on the IL in AAA. I his he's not I don't believe it's a serious injury. I will figure out what his injury is and get back to you on that. It's been sort of a recent update for Kowser that he's been moved to the IL. But I do think he's arriving soon, and I think that we're going to see him in right field for the Orioles, and he's a player that needs to be stashed, and he's on the rise, in Dynasty for sure. I think he's a potential top 10 prospect as soon as the next rankings update. I know other people are already there with him. I think some of the concerns I have with Kowser preseason have dissipated. Those platoon splits are gone. I do still have some reservations given his underlying swing and miss. All right, let's move to pitchers. And we're going to talk, I'm not going to necessarily talk about all of these guys, but let's start at the very top. And this is a player that's likely going to graduate by the next rankings update, and that's Grayson Rodriguez. He is ranked sixth on May 5th. He has not performed, I think, as many had hoped he'd perform at the major league level. And even since that May 5th rankings update, if you count May 4th too, since I didn't necessarily, it's not necessarily folded in too much into my rankings, he's given up over his last four starts 18 earned runs in 17 and two-thirds innings. He's given up eight home runs over those four starts. It's been terrible. He's really just been a disaster of late for the Orioles. And, a lot of the underlying stuff's just not going to be great for Grayson Rodriguez either. So let's dive into his stuff and figure out what's going on with Grayson Rodriguez, and then we'll move on to another pitching prospect. But yeah, we're going to see Grayson Rodriguez very likely graduate by the next rankings update. So this is the last time I'm likely going to be talking about Rodriguez as a prospect. All right, so this year, the big issues with Rodriguez have been related to his fastball and his cutter primarily. His fastball this year has allowed a 488 weighted on base average against. It's been just mashed. Its hard hit rate against his fastball has been 61.7%. It's just been consistently destroyed. Now, he's still averaging 96.5 miles an hour, so he has great velocity. So, and his stuff plus is he grades out really well on stuff plus because look, he has huge velocity. He has great extension, 7.1 feet of extension. His stuff plus grade for his four-seam fastball is 109 at the major league level, which is, very much above average. Two plus, I'd say it's probably plus for that purpose. But the shape of his fastball, has been a concern. I can continue to talk about this. I've talked about this last year, I talked about it earlier this year, I talked about it all the time with his shape. I've written about it. His fastball shape is poor, and it's going to cause his fastball to play down. His fastball command is not bad. He has pretty good fastball command. The issue with his fastball is its shape. And the thing is stuff plus incorporates shape. So I think sometimes for pitchers, shape maybe matters more than velocity, extension, a lot of the things we are attracted to with a pitching prop with a pitcher. And sometimes it doesn't. But I think for Rodriguez, I think his shape, fastball shape right now, it matters a lot. Unless his fast, and I think it means that he needs to have better, even better command of his fastball. And his command, again, is fine right now, his fastball command. So that is my real big concern with him, is that, his fastball is playing way down, and something needs to change. His fastball, how he uses his fastball needs to change. Now, let's talk about the cutter. Look, I don't like his cutter. I've not liked his cutter ever since I've seen his cutter. He sort of started relying on it more last year, and it's not like it's one of his main pitches. He throws it just 11.7% of the time, but it's not a good pitch, and he needs to just scrap it, in my opinion. Its weighted on base average against is 497. It is only generating 13.5% whiffs. Its hard hit rate against is 71.4%. It's just getting mashed. It's a very flat pitch, doesn't have a lot of depth. It's 89.7 miles an hour. In general, it's just not a very good pitch, and it doesn't grade very well on Stuff Plus either. His Stuff Plus grade on his cutter is just 76, so it grades as a below average pitch as well, and it just needs to go away. It needs to be retired and sent to where pitchers send pitches that just don't work. It doesn't work. It needs to go. Now, his other breaking balls grade well for Stuff Plus purposes. His slider is 106, his curveball is 118. He throws his slider far more than his curveball, 15.6% versus 7.7%. Both miss enough bats. His curveball has not performed well this year. It's his best Stuff Plus grade, but its weighted on base average against is 467. His hard hit rate against is 87.5%. It's been just absolutely mashed. I feel better about his curveball kind of rebounding. It has been a pitch in his repertoire forever. I think part of the problem with his curveball usage is his curveball command has been bad at the major league level. He's not throwing it for strikes, he's not throwing it in the zone very often, and it's been scattershot. And because of that poor curveball command, I think that's the main reason why it's really performing poorly. And speaking of that, of command, his secondary command has been bad. And I think that generally is why we're seeing a lot of struggles from Grayson Rodriguez. His slider command has been disastrous this year as well. And because of that, his sliders also, while it's actually is performing fine, it's not performing well, like how it could perform, because he basically just doesn't throw it in the zone, like at all. His zone rate on his slider is 37.6%, 37.3%. And I think that it's just he doesn't throw it for as many strikes, and I think it's not necessarily a plan. I think it's just his command of it is just not great. He's kind of gotten away with it because it's still performed fine for him, but again, it's a concern. All these secondaries, just very concerning for me, and I think they need work. All of them need work, and I think that's part of why we're seeing his fastball get crushed, because hitters are just sitting on it. Meanwhile, his best pitch is his changeup. It's always been his changeup. I love his changeup. It's a fantastic pitch. It's performing at the major league level. And again, his changeup command hasn't been great either. It's been better than his slider and curve ball command, but I do love his changeup. He's able to throw for strikes. He pounds the zone with it. He actually has a very good process with his changeup, in that he kind of locates it in the upper part of the zone a lot, very much like his fastball. So I think because of that, it even plays up further. This year, generally, it's just been very good for him. His changeup has a 276 weighted on base average against. It has easily the best run value of negative four on the year, negative two per 100 pitches. It's been his best secondary. So, but the problem right now with Rodriguez, and this is the concern I had preseason, is it's kind of looking like a fastball change of profile. And from a righty, that's a concern. He needs to clean up those secondaries, the curve and the slider in particular. He needs to clean up, because as it currently stands, the command on those is so bad that it's really impacting him, and he's just not finding success because of that. All right, let's move off of Grayson Rodriguez, and we're going to talk about Yuri Perez. So, Yuri Perez has arrived. Hooray! I love Yuri Perez. I was pounding the door for Yuri Perez very early. I will say I probably wasn't the first. I think Ian Smith was the first. He was with Prospects Live at the time. But I was very early on him, and I wrote about him in, I believe it was 2021 in April. I think the second week of the season, I put an article out about him and Andrew Painter, both of which obviously exploded. And look, Yuri Perez is everything. He checks a lot of boxes you want to see in a pitching prospect. He's got great command. He's very projectable. He's very young. His stuff, I think, is still a work in progress. But the thing that he does well is the thing you want pitchers to do well, and that is throw a fastball and command it very well and very effectively. His fastball has fantastic data, average 97 miles an hour. Its stuff plus grade at the major league level so far is 115. It's going to improve. I know at the minor league level it was much higher this year in Double A. Of course, he was pitching in the Southern League, but his fastball generally has very good shape. He did pitch in Colorado most recently. That's probably impacting the fastball stuff plus grade because, the high altitude messes with vertical movement on pitches, and particularly fastballs. I do still love his fastball. I think it's a fantastic pitch. I think it's a very much a plus plus offering. I think it will carry him. Now, the concern with Eury Pérez has been the secondaries. Like how good are they going to be? Because generally, they're all very flat. He's a pitcher who has a lot of flat as kind of that's just how he works from his arm angle. His slider, I think personally, is his best secondary at this point, very clearly. But it's playing as sort of, I think from a stuff plus perspective, it's 99, right? So it's average. It's average 86.1 miles an hour. Does not necessarily get a ton of vertical depth, and it doesn't get any horizontal movement basically at all. So it's very much a short slider, and I think that it needs to be even thrown harder to be effective, in my opinion, to be more effective. That said, it's been effective at the major league level so far. He's thrown only 73 of them, but his whiff rate is 41.7%. His weighted on base average against is just 187 for a slider. So I think while it only grades as an average pitch for stuff plus purposes, I think it probably is at least an above average pitch. I think because of how it works within his repertoire, because his repertoire, again, everything's flat. The next pitch is his curveball. His curveball is 80, right around low 80s, 80, it's average 80.5 miles an hour. It's very mediocre in terms of depth, and it's always been that way. Always been my concern with Eury Pérez is this curveball is below is borderline it's a borderline pitch, I think. And that said, it's been a borderline pitch, but it's really performed well this year. 57.1% whiff rate at the major league level and 160 weighted on base average against. It's one of those, again, I think that it performs well because of the pitches it's around. I think it performs well because of the slider and because of the four seamer. I think generally, as on its face, his curveball is not a special pitch at all, but it'll probably perform above expectation because of just the overall in the context of his stuff. Finally, his changeup. He hasn't thrown a ton at the major league level, just 7.7%. He's just thrown 19 of them, but his changeup, I think on its face, is not going to grade well in stuff plus because it has to be looked at next to his fastball, and it's a typical Marlins changeup in that it's a hard changeup, power changeup that next to his fastball has decent movement and decent separation. I've seen it perform better than it's performed at the major league level so far. Its stuff plus grade is just 84. Again, stuff plus, I will say, if there's any pitch it has trouble with, it's changeups. And I think his changeup will perform a little better than Stuff Plus perceives it to be. I think it's at least a potential average pitch, again, in the context of his arsenal. And that said, I just talked about his slider curve and changeup, and I said his slider maybe a 55, his curveball borderline, his changeup average. I mean, again, not special secondaries, and they do need to improve. And the slider has been added. He can sit higher than 86.1 miles an hour with the slider, and I think it's reasonable to say, look, Stackhouse sometimes misidentifies pitches, so it may misidentify some curveballs as sliders, some of the harder curveballs he throws as sliders, and cause the slider number to be lower. I haven't dove into a start-by-start data necessarily, but I think that generally those secondaries need to improve for Eury Pérez to be an elite starting pitcher. He can't just rely on an elite fastball. he may end up looking a lot like what we saw with like Logan Gilbert before this year, and that, it is a fastball first profile with inconsistent mediocre secondaries. That's the concern. But even still, that still has a lot of value for fantasy. And again, Eury Pérez is so young, 20 years old. He's 6'8", immensely projectionable still. This is not a Tristan McKenzie type of frame. I think he will add more mass and muscle. I could see him adding more velocity. He has added more velocity even over the last year. So I think that there is a lot more projection left with Eury Pérez. There's a lot more room for improvement. And, the cement hasn't dried, that simply put. All right. After Eury Pérez, I'm going to just briefly touch on Ricky Tiedemann. Look, health is a concern with Ricky Tiedemann. He had an arm scare in the spring. He has an arm scare now. He has had command issues. His walk rate is up at 13% so far in Double A. When he's hitting the zone, he's missing a lot of bats because his stuff is loud, 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 loud. But these concerns, these health concerns in particular, I think do warrant potentially fading Tiedemann a bit in Dynasty because, again, there is no such thing as a pitching prospect and arms break. And, Tiedemann could conceivably just break. And these concerns now that have been, ongoing need to be a reason to fade him at this point. So, just be prepared for maybe even a potential more serious injury at some point with Tiedemann. I'm just a little bit concerned with him. All right, so let's move on to some AAA standouts, or MLB standouts. Sorry, let's move to the Major League side and talk about Tanner Bibee first. Tanner Bibee has hit the ground running with Cleveland this year. He's been simply one of their best pitchers since he's arrived. His stuff has popped at the major league level. He has a 3.18 ERA, and his WHIP is just 1.20 over his first 28 and third innings. 25 strikeouts, 8 walks. His average fastball velocity is 95.5 miles an hour. It has been a fantastic pitch for him. It grades out as and above average, very squarely above average. I think it probably plus stuff plus grade of 108, and it's a good fastball that he's able to locate very well. It has good carry. It's averaged 95.2 miles an hour on the year, above average carry, and I just think it's a quality plus fastball, simply put. Behind the fastball, he primarily works with the slider. He throws his slider almost 30% of the time this year. It has graded out well on Stuff Plus at 106. His slider has variable shape. I think if you're looking at Stuff Plus, if you look at a lot of the stuff, it's an average of everything. But he can manipulate his slider to be more of like a sweeper or more of like a firm traditional slider at higher velocity. It is average 83.5 miles an hour with plus vertical drop at that velocity and plus horizontal sweep at that velocity. In fact, it's being classified as a slider on Statcast, but it should be classified as a sweeper, in my opinion. I think it's a very squarely plus pitch. It's performed that way at the major league level. Its whiff rate's 34.6%, which may not like jump off the page, but that's consistent. Solid. That's actually pretty good for a pitch with that type of shape. Usually sweepers don't miss as many bats. They're really designed to generate weak contact. In fact, his hard hit rate on his slider sweeper, it's just 19% this year. His weighted on base average is 180. Very clearly a plus pitch. I think there's a chance it may be a better than plus pitch. I think it could be a plus pitch. If his slider was classified as a sweeper, I guarantee you its stuff plus grade would be better than what it is. Now, after those two pitches where things get a little sketchy with Bibee. First, he has his changeup. His changeup is very clearly his third pitch. His changeup is used basically exclusively to lefties. Same thing with his curveball. The slider and fastball are mainly, his slider is mainly used against righties, but then he goes to the changing curve more often versus lefties. The changeup is mediocre. It has it's more of a separation-based pitch in that it has 11 miles an hour of separation. The velocity separation is what drives its success in general, and it has performed well at the major league level because of that. For the most part, his velocity separation and his command of his changeup are both very good, and because of that, I think it performs well beyond its actual qualities, and it's going to have poor qualities generally. Its stuff plus grade is 90, so it grades out as a borderline pitch, but I do think it's at least an average offering, and I think it's playing that way, playing even better than that, of course, this year. His last pitch is his curveball. His curveball is mainly, again, used only to lefties, and it's really just like a strike-stealing pitch generally. That's what he used, how he used it in the minor leagues. It's basically how he uses it in the major leagues. And it's meh. It's a mediocre pitch. It's his worst pitch. It has a stuff plus grade of 84. It has decent depth, decent sweep. It's a looping curve. It just averages 78.6 miles an hour. Those types of curves rarely miss many bats at the major league level, and it's generally just that. I think it's a very squarely borderline pitch. It could, maybe it could potentially be an average pitch for him, but I'm not very big on his curveball. Generally with Bybee, it is fastball slider anyway. We're talking 6-6 with those two pitches, both plus. I think the changeups, again, I think at potentially average. So that stuff may not necessarily jump off the page, but when you fold in his, you know, excellent command, his excellent control, his walk rate's just 7%, and I would expect that to continue to improve at the major league level as he gets more and more comfortable there. He's only given up one home run over his first five starts. He's managing contact well. He does give up a lot of fly balls, so I do expect him to give up way more home runs in time. So I would think that he's likely going to backslide, but still, there's a lot to like with Tanner Bibee. The next major league player that's a big standout for me, and I think is very obvious, is Bryce Miller. Bryce Miller has had an epic start to his career with the Mariners. It's really a unique profile in that he has one of the best fastballs in baseball because of its shape. His fastball shape is absolutely elite. He has one of the highest induced vertical breaks of any starting pitcher in baseball. This year, his fastball has averaged 95.3 miles an hour. It's vertical movement versus average is 3.3 inches, which puts it squarely as one of the biggest rising fastballs in all of baseball. In fact, it trails only Cutter Crawford, if you want to count Cutter Crawford among starting pitchers, in vertical movement versus average. If you do not count Cutter Crawford, it is the top of all starting pitchers. It's more vertical movement versus average than Nestor Cortez, who led majors last year. So it really does have elite shape, and because of that elite shape, what's going to happen with this fastball, it's going to miss more bats than normal for four-seam fastballs, and it will also induce a ton of fly balls, a ton of weak fly ball contact, weak pop-ups. That is kind of like that's kind of a difficult needle to thread, right? Because it's inducing so many fly balls, there's going to be home runs in time. He hasn't given up a home run yet. Its average launch angle on his fastball this year is 26 degrees. It's crazy. Again, you know, lots of pop-ups, lots of weak fly balls. In general, he's a massive fly ball pitcher. His ground ball rate this year is just 26.6%. So it's a bit of a concern. That would be my biggest concern with Bryce Miller, is that he's such a fly ball pitcher. But the fastball, again, is elite. Its stuff plus grade is 130. It's a very clear plus-plus pitch. Arguably better than plus-plus, and it's performed that way at the major league level. It's been fantastic. Its run value is already -7 on StatCast. Its run value per 100 is -3.0. So performing like an elite fastball, it has a lot of elite qualities. I mean, I think that it's not far from projecting as an 8 and as an 80 grade fastball, even though it only averages 95.3 miles an hour because of its shape being so elite. Its weighted on base average against is just 135 this year. So again, love his fastball. I think it's probably still not an 8 because of my concern with all the fly balls it does allow. I think that there's going to be home runs that he gives up. But he does lean on heavily. He throws it 67.7% of the time. He's one of the more fastball-heavy pitchers in all of baseball. So now let's talk about the other pitches he works with. So Stuff Plus loves his slider. It grades as 122 on Stuff Plus. And because of that, I think it's better on Stuff Plus than it probably is in actuality. He throws it 16.3% of the time. He has only missed 9.4% of bats with it. His whiff rate is so low. That is he's gotten very lucky in a lot of ways. His weighted on base average against is just 104, despite the fact that he's just not missing any bats with the slider. His slider is a lot like Eury Pérez's slider, except it has a bit more depth than Eury Pérez. It's averages 86.3 miles an hour, and it has a little bit more this horizontal movement, so sweep than Eury Pérez. So just a bit more movement generally than Eury Pérez on a slider, but it has worked really well. It's obviously found a lot of success so far this year. What his issues that he had in double A this year were mainly due to secondary command issues. Both the slider and curveball he had would have at times struggled throwing strikes with and trouble locating them. And that's not at all been an issue this year. He's pounding the zone with all of his pitches, including his secondaries. And I think part of the reason why he's not missing bats is because he's just sitting in the zone with these secondaries and daring hitters to swing. It's worked. I have trouble seeing it continuing, given that he's just not, again, in general, missing bats on a whole as much as you'd want to see, and he's giving up all these fly balls. So I do expect heavy regression generally, but there's still a lot to like, even with these two pitches. Then we talk about his curveball. His curveball is deemed a curveball. It really is a sweeper, and I don't know why Statcast says it's a curveball. It's not. It's a sweeper. It has huge depth for a sweeper. It comes in at 81.4 miles an hour with massive depth for a sweeper and lots of sweeping action, 13.6 inches of sweep. It has produced well. It's performed fairly well at the major league level. He's had more command issues with the sweeper than he's had with the slider. And I think that it's just not quite performed quite as well, I think, because these types of sweepers, this is a sweeper that's somewhat similar to like Kodai Senga's sweeper. They can tend to, I guess, hang, a hanging breaking ball, right? So they can be far more hittable. Like their data will look good, I think, on its face. Like the shape will look good and Stuff Plus will like it generally. Those sweepers that sometimes have big depth and good a decent bit of sweep, but maybe not massive sweep, can get hit pretty hard. I saw Kodai Senga get walloped on one of those earlier this year, and I think that's the concern I'd have with Bryce Miller is that that sweeper, while a good pitch, I think has potential problems, and I think it's not maybe it needs to be, I think, tightened a little bit more, maybe thrown a little harder too, even. His last pitch, which he's barely gone to this year, 4.9%, is his changeup. His changeup grades out just similarly to his sweeper, 92 on Stuff Plus. Sweeper was 84 on Stuff Plus. I think his changeup in general is pretty good, actually. I think it has solid velocity separation, 9 miles an hour, has very good difference in terms of very good separation, movement separation from his fastball. He just doesn't throw it very often. And he only throws it to lefties. So I think there's the changeup flashes potential to be an effective pitch. The biggest issue for him with his changeup is his changeup command is just not there. If the change of command gets there, I think we could see him even reach another level. But again, with Bryce Miller, I love his fastball. For jury's out a little bit on secondaries, but generally the whole profile is incredibly exciting. His walk rate is just 2.3%. He's firmly an up arrow pitcher, and I think that he needs to be in the conversation as a top five pitching prospect in all of baseball. I think there's a legitimate case to be made that right now, before he graduates, he may even be as high as two. That's crazy to say. I think that there's like, would you prefer Bybee or Miller? Where Miller's stuff, I think from a pure stuff standpoint, is better than Bybee's, and his command's taken such a massive step forward that I think there's a good case to be made that Bryce Miller is a better dynasty option than Tanner Bybee, both of which are excellent. Now let's get to the third major league pitcher that I want to talk about in this group, and he is, I guess, I think a step behind both Bybee and Miller at this point. And it's a pitcher I love, Taj Bradley. Taj Bradley was demoted to AAA, and he performed poorly after his demotion. He most recently was called back up in his first start back, which was, or his second start back yesterday. The Rays lost 20-1 against the Blue Jays. Not necessarily all Bradley's fault. He did give up three runs or four runs in four innings with nine hits, zero walks, seven Ks. But I think, we're seeing some of the concerns, I think, with Bradley's profile. Bradley shares a lot in common with Bryce Miller in that his fastball has very similar elite traits. It has actually more velocity. It's averaged 95.9 miles an hour. It has just a tad less induced vertical break, tad less vertical movement versus average than Miller, but it also has slightly more extension too. So I think that his fastball is really, really neck and neck with Miller's in terms of quality. I think they're both plus plus pitches. Where I think Miller separates himself from Bradley are the secondaries. Now, that's not to say Bradley's secondaries are poor by any means. Bradley's primary secondary, and I will note before I move on to his secondaries, Bradley's stuff plus grade on his fastball is 139. So it is versus 130 for Miller. So it does grade better than Miller's fastball. Bradley's primary secondary is a cutter. It basically operates at, it can operate, he manipulates the velocity of it. It can look more like a slider than a cutter. It can sit in the, it can hit like 90 or above, and it can be as low as like 84 or mid 80s. It has a wide range of velocity, and I think that's why you're often see people grade, say it's a slider. I've said it's a slider in the past, but it is a cutter. And it averages 87.6 miles an hour. And for a cutter, it has solid depth, and it has great sweep for a cutter. It's, again, I think it's hard to divorce it from a slider designation. I think because it's a very short pitch, and generally cutters don't miss many bats, period. Its whiff rate on its cutter is 26.6%. It has performed well this year. Its stuff plus grade is 109. It has been one of his best pitches so far this year. Its weighted on base average against is just 275. It's been, again, very good pitch for him. I think it's a plus pitch, just like Miller's slider. I think they're both plus. They both have seven fastballs. All right, let's move on to the next pitch. The next pitch for Bradley is his curveball, 12.9%. His curveball is very different from Miller's curveball in that Bradley's curveball is more of a traditional 12 to 6 curveball with huge depth. And it comes in around, it averages 78 miles an hour. I think on its face, it has some decent qualities, but it grades poorly on Stuff Plus. Its Stuff Plus is just 82. It hasn't necessarily performed well at the major league level, and I just don't love it. It's been a pitch he's kind of waffled over over the course of the last couple of years, he'll like drop it sometimes for large periods of time during the season. Then he'll bring it back and kind of focus on it. I think it's best utilized as a strike stealing pitch. I think it shouldn't be thrown 12.9% of the time. He does throw it equally to righties and lefties. I think it really should probably be focused solely to lefties rather than moved at all, rather than thrown to righties as anything more than a strike stealer. I'm not very keen on it. Obviously, it grades poorly on Stuff Plus. It hasn't necessarily performed well at the major league level either. It's not a bad pitch. I think that, you know, I think it's probably better than its Stuff Plus grade. I think it's it could be average. I think at the very least, it's borderline. Now, after his curveball, he has a changeup that has performed very well this year at the major league level. He's only thrown 47 of them, but it has a 47.6% whiff rate and a 0.90 weighted on base average against. It's been very effective for him. His changeup only has about 7 miles an hour of separation. You would say on its face, it has a poor movement profile relative to his fastball. Even then, it's basically average. I think generally I'm not super keen on his changeup. I think because of how good his fastball is, it works. His changeup can work. And I think his changeup, again, is a pitch that he does utilize to both side hitters, more often to lefties, but I think it should be more focused as a lefty only weapon generally, because I just don't think the shape justifies its usage against righties. And its Stuff Plus grade is very poor, 67, and for good reason. Again, you know, on its face, its movement profile is among the worst you'll find in changeups in all of baseball. Its horizontal movement, its running action is just 10.7 inches. Its vertical movement is negative 3.9 versus average, inches versus average. It's a very flat changeup. It only works because he uses it sparingly. It's 11.5% usage, and because of how good his fastball is. It works off his fastball. So, you know, I think that Miller has more upside in his changeup and in his sweeper. So those third and fourth pitches, I think, for Miller give him the edge over Bradley. And, of course, his performance to date has been better than Bradley's, even though Bradley, of course, has been fine at the major league level, and he has missed more bats. So that is where I'm going to stop it today. We are getting a little deep on the podcast. There were other players I wanted to talk about, including Gavin Williams, Bobby Miller, Ben Brown, and even A.J. Smith-Shalver, who most recently was promoted to AAA and has his debut. I wrote about Gavin Williams, Bobby Miller, and Ben Brown very recently at Baseball Prospectus. So if you want to read about them, go check out my article. There will almost certainly be a piece coming out about Smith-Shalver in the coming month, I imagine. I will be writing about him, very much going to be writing about him at the very latest in June. But before, I will note with Smith-Shalver, in his debut, again, we only have one outing of hit for him in AAA. He was basically fastball slider almost exclusively. Threw his fastball 60.5% of the time. He threw a slider 37.2% of the time. He threw two curveballs. That was it. And, you know, his slider's data was not great. 85.6 miles an hour, just 32.8 inches of vertical break, just 3.1 inches of horizontal sweep. I think generally, if you were looking at it from a Stuff Plus perspective, his slider probably grades as above average still, or average to above. It's in that range. His fastball has very good data. His fastball 95.5 miles an hour with a lot of rising action. I think his fastball likely grades, maybe it's a plus pitch at this point, but I think that there is going to be a lot of hype about Smith-Shalver for good reason. I think it needs to be a little bit more muted than it is, because I think the secondaries are not as good as we'd want to see from him, in my opinion. Again, you know, I think the fastball is very good. The slider's solid, but then there's nothing else. And, you know, we're going to need to see a larger sample before I'm really willing to, like, lay a claim about him even entering the conversation among this top group of pitching prospects. At the very least, I will say with Smith-Shawver is that he is moving up into the top 100 in the next Dynasty Rankings update, or the Prospect Rankings update, and Dynasty Rankings update for that matter, in June. But for now, he's definitely outside this top 50 or top tier of pitching prospects. All right, well, that'll do it for the podcast today. Thanks again for listening. Be on lookout for an article this week on the on hitting prospect standouts in AAA and in Low A, where we have public Statcast data. And next week I'll be doing an article on dynasty standouts at the major league level. And then on June 9th is going to be the next top 500 updated dynasty prospect rankings, and then June 16th is going to be the updated dynasty top 500. So be sure to stay tuned to all the content that's coming out at BP. And again, thanks for listening.